I left school in 1936, I was 14, and then my mum died while I was 14. So I left my dad with two youngsters. Well, we had an aunt who lived further down from us, and she used to see to my brother and sister, because they were 4 years and 6 years younger than me. And I said to my dad, I'm going to see, you know, give him a bit more ease, because he's, you know, going to work and that. Then half of Liverpool and Birkenhead went to see. He always, at least on the trip, didn't he? Yeah. So I just went down to Blue Funnel and I got a job. Yeah. Oh, in the docks, at the docks. Like, there was no pool or anything then. But you know, like the pool, well, I don't know whether it's still going. No, I think it's just companies see to it now. But, no, signed on in a ship. Well, the Birkenhead had a little shipping office by the, down by the Four Bridges it was. Well, it was in the dock sheds, really, you went to apply, because it was a little office up, little offices built up in the corner, you know, in the dock sheds.
Yeah.
Deck boy then. Yeah, went to the Far East, you know, to China, Japan and Singapore. Oh, it was on the Wednesday in a week, I think it was sometime in a week. And then they had sailed on a Saturday, so I signed on the, and then a couple of few trips to the Far East. I thought it was, you know, it was just, I didn't know what it was. Well, it was like a deck boy, they call it a Peggy, you see, it was a deck boy. And you don't, they got the meals and cleaned up and the mess room, and everybody cleaned their own rooms. Like in the Blue Funnel, they had a room. When you'd finish your work in the morning, say about 10 o'clock, you had to go out on deck and learn what you were going to do. And that's how you worked through, and then you went to ordinary seaman after a few years, after 12 months. And then we went to, we only went for bunkers. We only got coal and water and that. A few bits of cargo discharge, not much there. Most of it was for the Far East, you see. Colombo was the next after that, you know, in Ceylon. You just in the harbour, it loaded into barges. Once ashore in Singapore and Hong Kong. Yeah, over 5 months the trip was, yeah. So it was, you know, we got here and away. And, but lost track of all my mates at home then, see. And then went away, you guess. Stayed away after the war, you know, till 57. So consequently, I lost track where everybody went. Even my own family, half my cousins I didn't know, because I'm the eldest of both sides. My dad and mum were the eldest of both sides in their family. So I was the chief Indian and with the cousins, I was the eldest. But I lost track of them. He had to die me, it was about 2.5 years. And then once the war started, the war broke out. I'll tell you how when it happened. We come back from the Far East and we were going in the Diomede and we were going round the land, what they call round the land. We went to London and then discharged what cargo had to be discharged there, and then Hull, Rotterdam, Hamburg, Rotterdam, Hamburg. And then Gdynia in the Baltic for coal, for bunkers, because it was cheap, the coal there was cheaper. So they used to go through the Kiel Canal into the Baltic from Hamburg and then get coal, you know, your bunkers. And then Danzig, we have a bit of cargo for the different places. But we went back to Rotterdam for cargo. And the afternoon we got there, and the next, in the night, they called us out at 3 o'clock, they said, we're leaving. And we went to Plymouth, and we got some embassy people on, because only a cargo boat, it carried about 6 or 8 passengers. It was 3 days before the war broke out. It was in Hamburg 10 days before the war broke out. See, so we'd been in dry dock in Hamburg. So if the war had broke out a bit earlier, we'd have been caught and have been in prison all the way, all the war. Anyway, we went to Plymouth and we were in the Bay of Biscay. We didn't, see, you're on foreign articles. So even going around the land, you stayed on foreign articles. You didn't pay off in London, which some of them, they, if you wanted to, you could pay off, you know. But we went round the land and we still on the same articles and we went out. And then it's foreign articles, but we didn't go in alongside of Plymouth. Just stayed out off and got these passengers on and away again. So no, that was like a 10-month trip by the time we
got. The actual...
Oh, well, we had no wirelesses on ships then. We didn't have a wireless for the crew. Only the radio operator. And he had the news. And he called us on the day, in the afternoon on the Sunday, the skipper called us all out, the Chinese firemen and all, and he had an interpreter for them. And he told us the war had broke out and we were considered ourselves in the Navy. This is what he told us. So one fellow said to him, we get our tot every day, Captain. He said, don't be so... what was the word he used? no, we were outward bound to the Far East again. But they shut the Mediterranean when the war broke out. So we weren't at the at Gibraltar before to go into the Mediterranean. So it was closed. So we had to go round the Cape. And we went round the Cape and went in Cape Town. And then we went to Durban, loaded coal in Durban, a full load of coal for Singapore. We went to Singapore and they put a gun platform on us in Singapore. And then we went to Hong Kong, Japan, Vladivostok. No convoy then. And then back to Singapore and they put us a gun on. No ammunition and nothing, just a gun. And it was a Japanese 4.7 going from the Great War. So that was, we had that gun. And we didn't get it. And coming back, they'd open the Mediterranean again because the Italians hadn't come into the war then. We'd come through the Suez Canal then back. And we went to, going to Jib. And we got ammunition in Jib. So we had a bit of fire and practice when we come out of the ship and then home. But no convoy then.
Well, what was the thoughts of the crew when war was on and you were on your own, didn't you?
No, there was nobody. I used to be, you could tell that the married man with kids, there was sort of a lot of fellas who were going to see till he was 65, you know, them days. Because it was a job, wasn't it? It was work. And you could tell that the married men were worried. You know, a lot of them were worried. Yeah. Well, I sailed with men that was 73 I sailed with one old fella. Yeah. When I got home, we got home early in January. And then about a couple of weeks after, been away 10 months then, over 10 months. A couple of weeks after I got another ship, the Aeneas.
Is this still Blue Funnel?
Yeah, and then it went to, we went to the Far East again. 1940 January. Before that, when I told you we went into Rotterdam and he sent us out, you know, told us to get out that night. What happened? It was thick fog. when we were coming out, 3 o'clock in the morning, and we anchored outside because you couldn't see from here to there. It was really super fun. And you have, it was three on the watch, you know, on the deck. That was the man on the bell. He has to keep ringing the bell every minute to give it a good banging with the bell. And then there was one of them after, one on standby. You know, we had a little triangle you could rattle if you wanted, you know, make a noise. Mm-hmm. Kind of could be heard in the fog. It seems to travel the sound in the fog. And I was on the poop with this Scots fella. He was from the Isle of Skye. I'd never forget him. And he was, the Chinese had their galley aft, you know, on the poop. And I could see this thing, just the fog had thinned out a bit, and I could see this thing, and it was sticking up and it was, and I thought, oh, that's a fisherman's boy or something. I'll get some coal and see, because it was only 17 and a half. Get a bit of this coal, and I was firing at this. And it started to move, didn't it? Well, this Scotch fella, he'd been sunk in the Great War. Well, he swore at me, and there wasn't a word that he said, there wasn't a swear word. He went mad. Well, I'll never forget him, McLeod, his name was. And he cursed me into eternity before, he said, it's interesting. Anyway, but they was on station, because they were 300 mile out when they sank the Athenian on the same day, so they must have been around on station. You see, the submarines. We went out then, you know, the fog cleared and we went to Plymouth and went out. But when we went out then, the Mediterranean, it was opened again, so we went through the Mediterranean to the Far East and done the Japan and everything. Japan wasn't in the war. But they were you could tell they were nasty. You could tell in Hamburg the Germans were nasty and all, you know. They knew the war was coming on. And not every one of them, but there were some nasty ones. You could tell, I couldn't speak German or anything, but you could tell the way they were looking at you and that. And when we sang, we come back then. From the Far East. It was a passenger boat, this, but there was no passengers on it. You know, it was just running.
Passenger cargo, yeah.
Yeah. But there was no passengers on it. And we went to the Far East and back again. And we went loaded. We loaded a lot of rubber in Singapore. You know, bales of the size, you know, big bales of rubber. Up the channel, but we were in a convoy there, not in the Indian Ocean, there was nothing there, no convoys there. Joined up with a convoy, come from Sierra Leone, you know, Freetown. And we got back, and we went to London. I think there was some raids in London, and there was raids going on. And we went from London, and we come back to the channel, and we said, they fitted on the end of the winches, they fitted a drum of wire, you know, and so it could be screwed on with a wing nut. So, and the winch was left clear of any the gear. And they put a barrage below, or a thing on the truck, they put a sheave on the truck, and then the wire threw it back down to the deck. And the RAF fellas come aboard in London and put a barrage balloon on. So we had a barrage balloon going along the channel. But that was about a fortnight after Dunkirk. Well, the Germans by then had took over the airfields on the north of France. And you'd only have to look across and see all the barrage balloons. It's a convoy going along the channel. So they knew you were there. Well, we got off Star Point. We got strafed all the afternoon with fighters. The convoy in June 1940, and then we got sunk then at 4 o'clock. I was sitting in the mess room, and the next thing, the ship's jumping up down
with the strapped
bombers, Stukas.
Yeah.
You know, they come and they sunk us. Two bombs, two bombs hit us, and she listed on the side, so we got off. We lost about 28 in that. And I didn't know till then, and I'd been under attack all afternoon. Well, we had no anti-aircraft gun. So only there was two gunners with Strip Lewis guns, and that was all the anti-aircraft they had till then. And then we got in the boats, and we got what was injured into the boats, because if you're injured and you're somewhere where no one knows you are, well, you're finished, because you've got to be quick. But no, it was turning on its side. If they sunk it the next day, it was still afloat because it had half the cargo in it, rubber. So it was helping to keep it afloat, funny enough. You know, when they're going on the side. Yeah. Anyway, the Navy sunk it the next day. I lost a silver-plated cornus I had. I used to have a guy be in the band. And I cherished that, and I lost it. You know what? My roommate, one of us, four of us in the room, one of the roommates. Now, he was sitting in the mess room with me because he was on the same watch. And he run out onto the poop, because you could get out of our... We lived out, and you could get out onto the poop from the after then. We went, what's up? And then we seen all the... Oh, there was coal dust everywhere in the air, you know, with the... went in the bunkers and the engine room, and the coal dust up in the air. No. I couldn't hear it. It was a lot of noise. It was steam hissing and all that, you know. And the whistle going. The whistle. He must have blew the whistle and it stuck on and it was steam. We got the lifeboats. Got the lifeboats away. And got three lifeboats away. But there was... Then he strafed the lifeboats after. So our fighters were out as well.
Yeah.
You know, but there was Stefan and they killed a couple in the boats, in the lifeboats, yeah. Fellas got bullets in them. But lots of Chinese, and there's no cenotaph for them. You know, there was a lot of Chinese in British ships got killed, and Indians. But there's no independent thing for them. And that ship now, on the cenotaph in London, there's only 8 names of that ship. The rest were Chinese that got killed down below. And Stuart and the things. I thought it was very mean on the things. You'll hardly see. All the English fellas will be on. They might find a lot of Indians on, but very few Chinese names are on. You know, and it's mean. It's mean. And after the war, you know, they sent a lot of Chinese home from to Chinatown in Liverpool, because I was on the ship that took them back, hundreds of them, took them back to the thing.
Oh.
I was 18 then. I was 18. There was destroyers with us, a couple of destroyers, and one of them come alongside and said, stay where you are, don't try and land. Because you see the land, 5 miles off the land. And we could see the land. And he said, don't try and go alongside, go ashore. He said, because you'd probably get fired on, because there was a lot of these people coming over from France, spies. The Germans had it all arranged. They could get coming over, by the way, they were refugees in small boats coming from France to England, escaping. And they were cutting on, they was there. So they were guarding and picking everyone up. So he said, you might get fired on. Come back for us. And picked us up and took us. It was in the middle of the channel. You know, on the lifeboats, like. Yeah. So when he landed us in Plymouth, yeah. No, come home. All they had on was a pair of old shoes, because what gear we had on the deck, you always pabbed your bag or have all your gear washed around you going around the lands. And what you wore, you dumped in the scupper after, you know, you got rid, because you was all oily and that when you tied up. So you just took that off, had you, had your bath. Well, it was only buckets of water, you had only a bucket to get washed in. That's, there's no bath. Yeah. Salvation Army give us a bag, a cup of tea, and a bag with shaving gear and a little towel and flannel and toothbrush and a bit of toothpaste, a little thing of toothpaste and soap. And then there was eight of us. It was myself, the cook, this lad that was going to tell you about. Said one of the cooks, the carpenter's mate, and we all got this thing, a little card given to us for the oxygen. I'll never forget the oxygen it was called. And we got in this little, what was it, back of a truck, on the back of a truck. That's a little truck, the back of a truck we got. And we went, and it was the workhouse he took us to. So when we got there, what Chinese there was there? Their Chinese had been landed, they let them off before us, probably to check them. And they were in like bunks. It was a workhouse, there was bunks in it. But we didn't get the bunks. We had to sleep on the floor that night. So the Chinese were in the bed and we were in, on the deck. We had to get washed. Well, there was a little, in the corner of this, it was like a dormitory thing, was a little wash basin in the corner, right in the corner, it was about 9 inches across. I mean, it was trying to wash out all the coal off us, coal dust off us down. And all I had on was this old dungarees, a singlet, you know, with sleeves. And you know, me and these old ripped dungarees, they were getting dumped. And that's all I had. Well, I said to the fella the next morning, oh, he couldn't get out the next morning. There was a guard on the gate, and he said, I can't let you out, lads, he said, because we wanted to get word home, you know, a telegram or something, because someone had a few bob from London, see. And he said to us, you can't go out. He was on orders to soldier. It wasn't his fault. But they had to be there because in case of these spies, because these spies had been taken to the workhouse and all. Only the next day, dinner hour, they come for us. But they wouldn't let us out in the morning. And I said to the workhouse fella, hey, have you got on any old coats? I haven't got a coat or nothing, that's all they had on me. Well, he kid brought me this jacket, and it was a bit too big for me. And it was like, it was a clown's jacket off the stage, I think. And it was all big black and white squares like a draft board. It was, honest. You know what the clowns used to wear? The big, it was one of them he gave me. And that's how I come home. Yeah, I was coming home. Got a train home. We got to Liverpool in the morning. So that was in the afternoon, and it was morning time before we got home, 8 o'clock the next morning, before we got home into Liverpool, because the trains were stopping halfway. You know, you'd stop for 2 hours with the train. You wouldn't know what was going right on somewhere in that. Oh, they give us a pound to come home in the workhouse when the agent come down. They give us a pound to come home with, you know, in case you get quite too easy and then. And he stopped it out of our wages. Stopped that out of our wages. When we got back, I didn't know where to live because my dad had moved. And this carpenter's mate said, well, I live near, I'll show you where your house is. So he showed me where our house was. And I got home about, it took a bit to get home, you know, from Lime Street we got there. And then we got to Birkenhead. And, we walked down, got the ferry. Because everything new was all haywire, you know, not like it is now. And He got home and my dad was there. I went out to work out. I went to all went and I knocked at the door because he had to go to the front. My dad was there. He must have been on another night shift or something. And he said, "What's with you, babe? What's happened?" So and so. I was telling him. And he said, "You're going to see no more." I said, "I am." You know, I said, because I can't get out of it now. Because if you had 12 months service at sea, they wouldn't call you up. You're getting emergency service. Because you're losing that many men at the first year of the war. Oh, the married men, they were nervous because some of them had three or four kids. Bella's 40, 50. They were up to 65. A lot of them got out when they didn't getting called up. But a lot stayed. There's a lot of married men at sea, you know, about 3 weeks. And then I joined a tanker in Lairds, British tanker in Lairds. And she was getting degaussing gear on us. And we left with a convoy to go out. And we were going to Aberdan, you know, in Persian Gulf. And we get down the north about, we joined a convoy here in Liverpool. Well, the convoy come up from the Bristol Channel. See, they weren't going out the south way because it was getting dangerous. And it come up from the Bristol Channel, Milford Haven, they'd probably come from. And we joined up with them, and then they joined more from Glasgow and Belfast coming out, the ships. They got about 40, sometimes 60 ships in a convoy. And we got round the north of Ireland and the thick fog come. And we broke down, didn't we? This was in the tanker. And we get out and broke down. Well, the convoy carried on then. See, the convoy didn't stop for you while it broke down. The convoy carried on. Well, there was no signalling going on, no radio contact till you got clear anywhere, because the subs are listening in, aren't they? They were listening in, you see. So the next morning, we got it cleared up a bit, and it still broke down, but the fog was still there where we were. And the convoy had gone on the next morning, and we thought we'd heard explosions in the night, you know, during the night when the convoy had left us in this fog. And the ships had been sunk around the ships that were more or less around them. So we thought, oh, we're lucky. Well, it took us nearly 7 weeks to get to Cape Town. I think we went halfway down to South America for zigzagging to... The engineers had done temporary there, and then we got to Cape Town. Well, we were in Cape Town for about 2 weeks on our own in the Indian Ocean. Well, there was nowhere. There wasn't any much bother there in the Indian Ocean. And then we went to Aberdan in Persian Gulf, and then to Alexandria in Egypt, you know, through the Suez Canal. And on the way up in the Red Sea, we got attacked in the Red Sea with the Italian. Yeah, the small convoy, yeah. I'm on the lookout, my turn on it, because it was three, yeah. You had each watch, you know, the watches kept going all the time. You had one, you'd done the first wheel, and then you had an hour off doing standby. You had that right through the night, checking on things and that. And then you'd done the second wheel. You had the first wheel an hour off, and then the last lookout of the four, you know, the last hour in the 4 hours. And then the next watch, you'd done the second wheel, and then you'd done the first hour lookout. And then you had a man done 2 hours lookout in between. He didn't have a wheel that watch. Well, I'm on the lookout anyway on the focal head, because the weather was pretty good. And I heard the bump going like noise. The Carlisle was escorting us, anti-aircraft cruiser she was. I was looking aft, and the after end of the convoy, there was high-level bombers. The Italians they were, they wouldn't come down to because they, anyway, they, and I could see this bounce coming up, and I'm watching like this, and I heard an aeroplane, and it's coming right towards our bow. I thought it was chopping the bomb. Oh dear. Well, there's much worse, like, and this, and good job it was one of our own, and I'm watching this thing. And when it went up, after you finished your lookout, you've got to go and report on the bridge. And he said to me, the third mate said to me, he said, "You didn't report that aircraft." And he said, "I did, it shouted to you." He said, "I shouted, you couldn't have heard it, with, you couldn't have heard the bell, but I was shouting to you and pointing to it." The fellow at the wheel said, He was in the chat room when it happened. He said he didn't even see you. So different things happened during the war. Like, oh, this was the one of our own aircraft coming right at us, you know, low down. So he must have been coming in for the thing. Yeah, able seaman.
Able.
We got to Alexandria, came back to Aberdeen, and then back home round the Cape with petrol, you know. You had to go right down the Cape and back to Freetown to pick the convoy up. Pick the convoy up there and then went on my convoy. We didn't. Started the war, there was very few ships because in 1940, the middle of 1940, you're having a lot of trouble in the North Sea with Norway. You know, a lot of these destroyers were in Norway. They were all, you could tell that they were a little bit subdued, you know, the men, they wouldn't go ashore or anything like that, you know, they were worrying about the families, because they're there to the bombings, you know. Oh, well, I don't know what it was, when you were younger, you didn't think like that, this is it. You were apprehensive, well, you, sometimes in the night, in the dark, if you wouldn't know where the submarine was because you never seen the submarine that they hit you. You wonder where the submarine was, and you're saying, where, and you couldn't see properly which side of the ship had been hit on in the dark because everything's pitch black, especially there's no moon out. You can't see anything. Only you used to put the tankers on the outside of the convoy so if they caught fire, they wouldn't drift into another ship because. Yeah. A ship keeps going after it's been hit for so long. But it could go into the, and set another ship because all the water's a light off a tanker when it lit up. But it's only went like that. It's like lighting the gas.
Yeah.
And it was a light, you know, when somebody hits it. The death throw got written off, Thomas, you know, was written off. In Tobruk that happened, you know, in Tobruk. The death throw got badly hit. We got it back to Alexandria and left it there because it was out of action. It was in the Atlantic. Well, we just left New York, but they said that the day before it had finished. They were all celebrating in New York the day before that the war was over. We'd heard it from the Yanks. The Yanks were shouting about it in the boats going past us, you know, tugs and things. That the war was over, we won the war for you armies, you know. Anyway, but we sailed the next day. Well, that night we sailed, but it was the following day. We were at sea, we were in the Atlantic when the war finished. So it was in it when it started and when it went. Why? Because there was rogue submarines still in the Atlantic, like, yeah. Ooh. We sank a submarine. Submarine was sunk, and he must have been going up to surrender, and he sunk it. He couldn't take any chance. Oh, well, I was home. That was 1944, yeah.